You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Disease Du Jour podcast. In today's episode, we had a really interesting conversation with Dr. Emily McAndrews on EOTRH in horses. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, digital editor of Equimanagement. The Disease Du Jour podcast was brought to you in 2024 by Merck Animal Health. Dr. McAndrews is a board-certified equine dentist and a diplomate of the American Veterinary Dental College. There are only a handful of board-certified equine dentists, and she is the only practicing equine dental specialist in the Mid-Atlantic region in eastern Pennsylvania. Besides owning Garden State Equine Veterinary Dentistry, she is a clinical associate at University of Pennsylvania's New Bolton Center and manages the referral dentistry caseload there. Originally from Connecticut, Dr. McAndrews completed an internship before spending 5 years at a general equine practice in New Jersey. During her time as a general practitioner, her interest in caseload became increasingly focused on equine dentistry. She found she could significantly improve her patients' quality of life by addressing problems found through a comprehensive oral exam. Garden State Equine Veterinary Dentistry was founded in 2015 with the goal of being able to help more horses through better oral health. She uses minimally invasive techniques for better outcomes in equine oral surgery. Dr. McAndrews regularly presents to equine veterinarians on dental disease and teaches equine dentistry to veterinarians and veterinary students. A graduate of the United States Pony Clubs, she enjoys teaching local pony clubbers horse management skills and horse owners about equine dentistry. Thank you, Dr. McAndrews, for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I love your podcast and I'm an avid listener, so I was kind of honored to be asked to be part of this as well and share a little bit of knowledge here.
Oh, thank you so much. We're so excited to have you. Do you want to get us started by explaining what EOTRH is?
Sure. EOTRH stands for Equine Odontoclastic Tooth Resorption and Hypercementosis. So that's a bit of a mouthful. It was named by a German who was naming the disease process, which when you look at it that way, it makes sense. So it's a painful and progressive condition in middle-aged to older horses mostly. It affects incisors and canine teeth, though there have been some reports of it affecting cheek teeth as well. And then the other part of that is maybe it's there more, we're just not looking enough at cheek teeth for the disease. So to get back to the name, so equine and then odontoclastic. So what that tooth resorption, so it's odontoclastic tooth resorption. So the teeth are starting to resorb. And then the hypercementosis is that part of it is there's a progressive proliferation of irregular cementum. So as I said, the name is describing the disease process here. So what happens with that is the disease usually starts peripherally, that's external tooth resorption, and then progresses towards the pulp. So tooth resorption starts on the periphery of the tooth, usually in the root or reserve crown of the tooth, and then that tooth resorption progresses towards the pulp. So in that, as that happens, when we get those, that tooth resorption happens, then there's infiltration of inflammatory cells. There'll be fibrosis of the gingiva and the periodontal ligament. There'll be lysis of the alveolar bone and then distortion of the vascular channels around the tooth. And then the tooth resorption with the odontoclastic cells will happen. And then they'll subsequently hypercementosis or more cementum. Cementum will be laid down or granulation tissue around the tooth. So this tooth resorption may occur with or without hypercementosis, but they found that there's always tooth resorption. Hypercementosis doesn't happen without tooth resorption. There's always some tooth resorption, and that hypercementosis is a reparative process. So the way I sort of explain this to owners is, so the tooth starts to resorb or basically dissolve, and then the body tries to repair those defects, that tooth resorption, by laying down cementum. Cementum is a normal component of dentition of teeth. It's a normal dental structure, but the problem is the cementum is being laid down in places that it's not supposed to be, and the cementum is a lot more brittle than some of the dental tissues that it's replacing. So it sort of becomes this self-perpetuating process where the teeth are getting more and more resorptive. They lay down this cementum, which isn't strong, doesn't have the same properties as the dental tissue it's replacing, and the disease process sort of progresses that way. They subsequently will get, as I mentioned, periodontal disease, osteomyelitis around these teeth, because again, there's this resorption, there's these defects in the bone and the tooth around it. So it gets filled in with bacteria and inflammatory cells. So this disease process is different than tooth resorption in both cats and people, because there's a different type of resorption than cats and people. And then cats and people don't seem to get that hypercementosis like horses do. And then it also has a little bit of different pattern as far as which teeth it affects. In cats, it seems to affect premolars and molars more than in horses. It mostly affects incisors and canine teeth, and then, as I mentioned, some cheek teeth.
So how prevalent is this condition in older horses? And are there any types of horses that it's more common in? Any like specific breeds that it shows up more often?
So when the disease was initially described back in the 2006, 2007, around there, it seemed to be more prevalent in geldings and then a little bit more in like thoroughbreds and warmbloods. But then subsequent studies have shown that there isn't a sex predilection, that it can happen in both mares and geldings at somewhat equal rates. Those studies may have had to do with like the types of horses that were presented for dentistry. And then there's been several recent studies looking at prevalence, and it's almost a little scary when you go and actually look at the prevalence of it. So these are studies that are radiographics, that have taken radiographic surveys. So there are horses that were presented for dentistry without having a history of incisor disease, or they were survey studies taken in like just a general population. And those studies found actually a very high incidence of tooth resorption. And these studies were looking at horses from 5 years old and older, and then they would put them in age groups, you know, based on that. One of the studies done by Henry et al., they found that 88% of horses and 49% of teeth had radiographic evidence of tooth resorption. So that's a kind of a shockingly high number when you think about it. And they were looking at horses, as I said, that were five and older. They found that 20% of horses and 7.6% of teeth had hypercementosis. And again, they found that they had to have tooth resorption to have hypercementosis. And then they found that almost 16% of incisors in asymptomatic horses had tooth resorption at a high enough stage to warrant extraction. These studies, they do find that there's a correlation with age and increasing rates of tooth resorption, and also increasing as they get older, they're more likely to have a higher grade of tooth resorption, particularly in the corner incisors. So the three incisors tend to have a higher stage of tooth resorption, especially in horses that are older than 15 years old. Another study, they were looking at horses that were 10 years and older, and they found that 94% of these horses had minor changes of tooth resorption, and then 62% had moderate to severe changes of tooth resorption. That same study found that all horses over 14 had some radiographic signs of tooth resorption. So it's a little bit of a scary number in that it shows you that this disease is a lot more prevalent than we initially thought. It also leads you to think about, you know, some degree of tooth resorption is certainly normal. It's normal in people and in other species. So it's part of how teeth adapt. But the tricky thing is determining when it's getting to a level that's pathologic and causing the horse pain. So that's sort of the next sort of step of once you see these lesions, you know, deciding what to do about it.
Wow, that's much more prevalent than I imagined it would be. Today's Disease Is Your podcast is brought to you by Prestige Vaccines from Merck Animal Health. Raise your standard in equine vaccines with Prestige. From a worldwide leader in vaccine manufacturing and innovation, the Prestige line has an enduring reputation of performance. Known for their safety and efficacy, only Prestige vaccines are backed by the Merck Animal Health Respiratory Biosurveillance Program, which helps practitioners create new standards of care and improved infectious respiratory disease management. Learn more at MerckAnimalHealthUSA.com. Do we understand what causes the condition, or do we know if there's any ways to possibly lower a horse's risk of developing it?
So unfortunately, we still don't know what causes it. There's definitely a few theories. Sort of the most prevalent theory, I would say right now, is that there's potentially biomechanical stresses on the tooth that are causing it. So the thought behind that, the reasoning behind that, is the tooth, the incisors start to get shorter at ages 13 through 15. So that's causing a decreased surface area for the periodontal ligament attachment. And then because there's less surface area, there's going to be more focal stress in certain parts of the tooth. For the incisors, that would be the labial aspect along the alveolar crest and then on the palatal lingual surface. So that increased stress causes a release of cytokines, and then those cytokines activate clastic cells. And then that starts the tooth resorption. And then sort of the same sort of pattern in the studies that they've looked at cheek teeth, the stresses are where they seem to get the hypercementosis. See, it also sort of correlates with the aspects of the cheek teeth that have higher stress. So that would be on the palatal side of the maxillary cheek teeth, and on the buccal side of the mandibular cheek teeth also may see more focal stress. So maybe that could be the pattern there. So what happens is this, they're thinking is this focal stress causes that, starts that tooth resorption. And then once you get that tooth resorption, you'll start getting a concurrent periodontal disease, which leads us to another one of the theories about what could be causing this disease is that potentially bacterial infections, mainly tympanema and tanarella, which could potentially be a component of this disease. The tricky thing is those two bacteria were also found in a large number of controls in this one study. So it's definitely a multifactorial series of events that's happening here that might be causing this disease. This obviously hasn't been definitively proven yet, but that's one of the theories. Also, other theories have been if there's immune-mediated diseases, if it's due to iatrogenic dental procedures like over-floating or over-grinding down, over-aggressive odontoplasty. One of the earlier studies looked at PPID or thyroid disease, and they didn't find a correlation other than old horses get both diseases, but that they couldn't necessarily correlate it otherwise. There was another recent study that was looking at trace minerals in hypercementosis. So that'll be an interesting, it seemed like they published their first paper on this, and I got the sense that there's more to come. So the long and the short of it, unfortunately, is we don't know. And without knowing what causes it, it's hard for us to stop the disease process because we don't know what exactly we're trying to stop other than that tooth resorption and hypercementosis.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems like it's a pretty complicated condition, a lot of factors that probably play into it. What are some of the early clinical signs that might make you suspicious that a horse has EOTRH? And then how quickly does it tend to progress?
So this disease is definitely tricky because, as I said before, there's a really high prevalence of tooth resorption. But unfortunately, often we don't actually diagnose the disease until the horse is in the later stage of the disease. It takes many years to develop. And part of why it's so hard for us to diagnose in the earlier stages is it does start in that reserve crown or the apice, the roots of the teeth. So by the time, if it's advanced enough to be affecting the crown, then it'd have to be quite, the disease has to be quite advanced. So, and this is where ideally we would take survey incisor radiographs of horses. Doesn't seem like we're quite there yet, but that's a good idea. And it's certainly a good idea if there's any suspicion. So the clinical signs can be very subtle, even with marked radiographic changes. And then the other tricky part is it can be difficult to correlate radiographic changes with pain. So that's tricky too. But as far as the clinical signs, they can have like gingivitis, periodontitis. So that means like red, irritated periodontal structures here, draining tracts, perilous lesions, gingival recession. You can see sometimes small pits in the teeth, calculus, that if you remove the calculus, you'll be able to see some tooth resorption, and then a bulbous appearance, the incisors from the hypercementosis. The disease, when it gets advanced enough, can progress to fracture, tooth mobility, periodontal pockets. They're often very sensitive in the speculum, so it's certainly something to rule out if you have a patient that's really difficult to do an oral exam on because they're really non-compliant. It could be due to pain. It can also cause, you know, dysmastication, weight loss, quitting, halitosis, bidding problems. So sensitivity, particularly when you're putting the bit in or out of the mouth because they don't like it when it touches the incisors, head shaking, rubbing. Sometimes another clinical sign that owners will note is that the horse rubs their incisors like on the wall. And then as we've mentioned, tooth resorption, it's a painful disease. So dentin is a sensitive structure. The other tricky thing is a lot of times there'll be essentially no clinical signs. As I was saying, it starts on the clinical crown and roots of the teeth. Sometimes these horses will have had the disease and been very gradually progressive. So the way I sort of explain this to owners is it's if the disease happened overnight, if they woke up one day and had very severe tooth resorption, we would see lots of horses that were off feed and really miserable. But because it's such a gradual onset, horses often learn to live with the discomfort. It's just like if they have arthritis that gradually develops in a joint, they get a little creaky, but they learn how to deal with it. So it's the same sort of way with these horses. A lot of owners will tell us that they don't notice any signs of pain, you know, even when you describe to, you know, and have them look very subtly for very subtle signs of pain. So that can be tricky, but yes. So sometimes no signs of pain is the answer there. The other not very specific or sensitive test that there is that you hear people talk about is the carrot test. So, and sometimes this can be helpful to demonstrating to owners, especially in a horse that you know is quite painful, but the owner doesn't perceive that the horse is painful, is to give the horse a nice big carrot and have ask the horse to bite down on the carrot, you know, so not cut it into a small bit that they can just bypass their incisors, but present the carrot and have the horse bite down on the carrot. And they often won't do that. So that sometimes is helpful for demonstrating to owners that your horse's incisors are painful. The other thing sometimes I notice these horses will do is their incisors are so painful they don't want to close their incisors, is they'll really prominently just rest with their tongue between their incisors. And I think they're using their tongue as like padding so that their incisors don't by mistake touch when they don't want them to. So that can be another clinical sign that I've noticed as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting about the carrot test. I'm sure that's pretty enlightening to some owners.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't use it as your only diagnostic. And we sort of, in the dentistry world, we sort of joke about it. But it's certainly, there's horses that it can be helpful for, or at least helpful to demonstrate to the owner that this horse's incisors are bothering them.
So how would you go about diagnosing the disease? I know you touched already on radiographs, but do you have a certain procedure that helps you make the diagnosis? Can the condition mimic other conditions that can cause some confusion?
So you definitely, you know, radiographs are how you diagnose this, or obviously in an ideal world, you'd CT it because I'm a dentist and we love CTing things, but that's obviously not practical. And it's usually an obvious enough, or at least by the time we're needing to address it, it's obvious enough that it's a radiographic diagnosis. So that's guided by your clinical exam. So as I've mentioned a few times now, it usually starts with the root and reserve crown. So what you'll see on your radiographs is there'll be alveolar bone loss, periodontal ligament widening or condensing osteitis. That'll lead to periapical abscess and those perilous lesions that I mentioned before. They can get osteomyelitis. You can see tooth fracture. And then, of course, the tooth resorption. It's mostly external inflammatory resorption. There's a number of different types of tooth resorption, which I'm not going to go into now. And that's kind of a geeking out dentist thing to know the types of tooth resorption. But sort of what's helpful for me and when I'm describing this to owners is I grade the tooth resorption. Again, as I said, it's helpful to give owners some perspective of where you are. Grade one tooth resorption is just on the sort of the periphery of the tooth. It's cementum and a little bit of the enamel. Grade two tooth resorption is now you're getting into the dentin, but not the dentin where the pulp is. And then grade three tooth resorption is tooth resorption that's into the pulp. And that's the stage where we typically recommend tooth extraction. Grade four tooth resorption, that the structural integrity of the tooth is getting lost, is lost. And then grade 5 tooth resorption, there's just remnants of tooth remaining. And then the hypercementosis, you'll see this sort of bulbous appearance on radiographs. The tooth will look like a drumstick, or there'll be loss of being able to identify periodontal ligament or pulp canal. That's obliteration usually from hypercementosis. So that's the diagnosis. As far as if it mimics other diseases, the other common disease that incisors can get is just periodontal disease, like without having EOTRH. And that can sometimes happen in older horses. So that would be more confined to widening of the periodontal ligament and also bone loss around the tooth, but without so much tooth resorption. So that would be something else to rule out on your radiographs when you're diagnosing these. And then, as I mentioned before, it's tricky, what degree is normal aging changes. As I've said from that earlier study, tooth resorption is really common in older horses. So, some of that has got to be normal. So that's where that grading I sort of use to help guide treatment. If they just have grade 1, so that's very mild changes on the periphery of the tooth, then I'll usually, or even grade 2, which is getting into the dentin but not quite the pulp, those horses, I'll definitely recommend that we monitor them and take follow-up radiographs or serial radiographs to monitor for progression of the disease. Ideally, to tell if they're having a normal aging change of tooth resorption, you would do a micro CT, but that is not exactly, you can't really do that on a live horse because it involves extracting the tooth. But on micro CT in these studies that they've done, they would see a different pattern of resorption, EOTRH versus normal aging. So that is what makes it a little tricky. But essentially, if they have tooth resorption, that is compromising the structure of the tooth, or it's getting to the level of the pulp, then it's probably getting time to do something about it.
So how would you go about managing this condition in horses, and how would you go about explaining the management options to owners? Because I know that can be another tricky part of the condition.
Yes. So, and one thing I forgot to mention earlier is there are sort of different forms of the disease a little bit too. There's horses that seem to get more tooth resorption. There's horses that seem to get a bit of both, of tooth resorption and hypercementosis. And then there's horses that get some tooth resorption, but mostly hypercementosis. It seems like the horses that get more hypercementosis are less painful than certainly the ones that get mostly tooth resorption. So that's also helpful when you're sort of diagnosing these and deciding a treatment plan too. But anyways, that was a side note. So all kinds of treatments have been tried. Everything from brushing to steroids to antimicrobials to splinting teeth have all been unsuccessful in long-term management. Something that we get asked about periodically is bisphosphonates, because they cause osteoclast cell apoptosis. So if you were going to go that route, you'd probably want a long-acting bisphosphonate. So that would be zoledronic acid is a long-acting bisphosphonate. But the problem is the side effect of that in humans with dental disease is osteonecrosis of the jaw, which would be bad. In our older horses that obviously we're trying to use this drug to treat dental disease. So it's not something we recommend yet, but just I get asked about it so periodically. So I just wanted to mention it. People have tried managing these horses with NSAIDs. My experience, and it seems like the experience of others, is that doesn't seem to change much. So that leaves us with, because we don't know what causes the disease, that means we don't know what disease process we need to start, what we need to stop in order to stop the disease process. So that leaves us with tooth extraction. So it often, by the time the disease is diagnosed, as we said, it's hard to diagnose in its early stages. So often the horses are in advanced stages of the disease, but by the time it's diagnosed. So that means the option that we have is tooth extraction. So this is a really tricky thing, client communication wise, especially if the owner wasn't expecting this. You know, their horse was presented for just routine oral exam, and you find this disease, and it's in its advanced stages, and you tell the owner the recommended treatment is tooth extraction of usually all of their incisors. Understandably, owners can have some significant concerns about that. And I really try to put myself in their shoes, because you're telling them to extract all of the teeth that the owner can see. You know, they don't perceive that they have all these cheek teeth that we know that they're there, that are there for, that they actually are the more functional for chewing. So I try to put myself in owner's shoes and certainly validate all their concerns, because they're right to be really concerned about someone telling them that a horse that they don't perceive has a problem needs all of their incisors extracted. So I'll go over the radiographs with them, and usually I try to show them normal and abnormal radiographs. And it's usually that helps give a visual for visual learners. Sometimes I've had owners talk to other owners whose horses have had the disease to try to, so that reassure them that it's okay to have your horse's teeth extracted. But it can be a really tricky thing, and I totally understand. I never force owners, or I never tell owners that they, or make them feel guilty if they don't do this. And I'm listening ear for all of their questions. As far as the extraction process itself, again, if they have grade tooth resorption or more, then I would definitely recommend extraction. I mean, the thing is grade 3 tooth resorption or greater, it should definitely be extracted. At grade 2 tooth resorption, it's affecting dentin, and dentin is a sensitive structure. So I don't think we can rule out that even a grade 2 tooth resorption tooth isn't painful. So I definitely have no qualms about if, you know, the 2 and 3 incisors are grade 3 tooth resorption and the center incisors are grade 2. I definitely have no qualms about extracting all of the incisors. What I tell owners, you know, owners sometimes will ask if I can, even in their severely affected horse, if I can just leave some of the incisors. And if their horse really has advanced disease in all incisors, the analogy that I make, and maybe this is a little crude, but I say, if you had 2 broken legs, or if your horse, if you had 2 broken legs and the doctor said, okay, fine, I'm going to fix one of your broken legs and then leave the other broken leg, you wouldn't be very happy. You know, you'd leave that surgery and sure, one leg would feel better, but your other leg would still hurt a lot. So that's how I explain it. And it's tricky because they can't tell us this tooth hurts more than the other. And because, as I said, it's hard to correlate radiographic signs with pain, it's hard to pick and choose and say this tooth is painful and this isn't, especially when they're in the advanced stages of the disease. So I refuse to do it. If they have advanced disease, I will refuse to extract just 2 teeth when they have all of them that are in the advanced stages of the disease, just because I don't feel like, I feel like then I'm putting the horse through a procedure that is not going to improve this horse's overall comfort and well-being. And therefore I don't, you know, I'm not comfortable doing it. That's sort of the line and the boundary that I've drawn with this, but definitely something to consider. Certainly I understand these incisor extractions, you definitely don't have to be a boarded dentist to extract incisors. And there's plenty of GPs who do a great job with incisor extractions. You just do have to be prepared to extract the whole tooth, even if it fractures. And so especially if there's a lot of tooth resorption, there's a good chance that incisor is going to fracture. So you have to be prepared to get the whole tooth. You can't leave retained roots or retained bits of cementum in these cases, because they'll continue to be painful and develop draining tracts and develop more hypercementosis if you leave bits of tooth in there. So you definitely, if you're going to do this procedure, you have to be prepared to do it correctly. You need to take post-extraction radiographs. You need to be good at doing nerve blocks to get this done. And then you also, it's a good idea to know some horses can be really, really difficult. You have to have a good sense of your facilities and your capabilities. And certainly some of these can be done by general practitioners and they do a really great job, but sometimes there can be horses that are really tough or the facility is not right for doing these cases. So just the whole picture to keep in mind.
But it sounds like this can be done on the farm if you have a practitioner who feels capable of it, or do you ever recommend referral to a clinic?
So this is a bit of practitioner and situation comfort. I'm spoiled now, so I will only do them in the clinic because I want, for my safety, the safety of the horse and the safety of my staff, I want to do it in stocks, just because sometimes, particularly when you're doing the nerve blocks, horses can react violently to doing the nerve blocks. They can strike or rear. And if you've ever been involved with that, it's a pretty scary situation. But That's definitely not to say that there's some situations where it's totally acceptable to do it on the farm and can definitely be done safely at the farm. It's just, again, looking at the whole picture and of the situation, the horse, the facilities, the staff that you have available to make a decision about where you think it's going to be most safely performed for both you and the patient.
Makes sense. So following extraction, what does the recovery process look like and what is the prognosis for the horse?
Sure. So what I tell owners is it's going to look awful for a while. Some folks, it's, you know, due to surgeon preference. Some folks close the incisions primarily. They do a surgical extraction and close the incisions primarily. Others leave the alveoli open or put some sort of packing material and leave and have that there. So it's a little bit, clinician preference on how the extraction sites are closed. Regardless, even if they are closed primarily, these incisions tend to dehisce. So most of them end up healing by second intention. The good news is they heal great. They look awful for a while. They dehisce, food is going to get stuck in the incision. It's going to smell. It looks really disgusting for a while. So I always warn owners that this is going to look awful for a while it's healing. But as I said, they all heal really well. You know, it's clinician preference a little bit how they have the aftercare procedures, you know, handled. But the long and the short of it is they essentially all end up healing really well. Any complications associated with the procedure are mostly related to the effects of needing to sedate the horse for the procedure. So, you know, there's not much we can do about that. And then making sure they're getting appropriate diet afterwards. The horses can benefit from some NSAIDs afterwards, but in general, they have an excellent prognosis. Dr. Bo Rainbow did a really great study recently where he sent out a survey to horse owners who had had this procedure, had had incisor extractions, and he found out that owners reported that horses had improvements in body condition, improvements in dropping hay, improvements in speed of eating, general behavior, improvements in resistance to bridling and head shaking, and overall horses seemed happier, had an improved quality and extended life of the horse is what the owners thought. Over 90% of those horse owners said they would have done it again, that they would do the procedure again on another horse in the future. So I think that really shows how much we can really improve horses' lives by addressing these really painful teeth. And it's certainly one of my favorite, and I know some of my other colleagues' favorite procedures to do, because we often get the feedback that we get most often is, I didn't realize how uncomfortable my horse was until after I had those teeth extracted. It goes back to what I said earlier. It's such a gradual onset and horses are so tough and they live to eat. Do anything to eat that they just deal with this pain. But when you remove this source of pain, your horse tend to have a new lease on life. So it can be really, really rewarding to help these older horses and their owners to get to see how much happier their older horse is. So it can be a really, really rewarding procedure. So it has, in general, has a great prognosis.
That's great that the prognosis is so good for such a painful condition, that there is a solution, even if we don't fully understand what causes the disease.
And along those lines, the other thing that the concern is with owners is how are they going to eat? And I know equine veterinarians know this, but just to reiterate, you know, they masticate their food with their cheek teeth. And, you know, most of the time we're leaving those teeth. So they'll still have their cheek teeth to masticate their food. They use their incisors for prehending or grabbing their food. So they can do that just fine with their lips. A lot of them already know how to do that because they've been painful for so long that they've already adjusted their eating to prehending with their lips. But if they haven't, they'll figure it out pretty quickly. So they can graze just fine. They can have a bit in their mouth just fine. They can do everything they did before just fine. They just won't have incisors. Their tongue will hang out of their mouth some of the time though, which make a difference sometimes if they're still showing, but that's the only thing to mention to owners too.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else you want to add on the topic before we wrap up?
So I think, you know, obviously we need some more ongoing research on what causes this. You know, I think there's some ongoing studies about looking again into those biomechanical forces. As I said, there was a recent study looking at trace minerals. There's a study that's going on now looking again at pain response in EOTRH horses. So it's been exciting. This is, as I said, a relatively newly described disease, but there's been a lot that's happened even in sort of a short in the last 15-ish years or almost 20 years since it's been described. So I'm excited to see what the future holds. And I hope that we figure out something maybe to slow down the process in horses that we diagnose earlier in the disease process. Maybe we can save some of their teeth. That would be nice.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. McAndrews, for joining us on this episode. And thank you so much to our audience for listening. And a very special thank you to our 2024 sponsor, Merck Animal Health, for allowing us to have these discussions. If you're enjoying the podcast, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review us wherever you're listening. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at csison@equinenetwork.com. That's csison@equinenetwork.com.